2019 saw many important cases and issues that will shape False Claims Act enforcement today and in the years to come. In this podcast series, we'll analyze some key developments to help you be better prepared if the government comes calling with tough questions. In today's episode, we'll visit with Hogan Lovells counsel Matthew Sullivan from our New York office and associate Claudia Pear from our Washington, D.C. office. They will be discussing the False Claims Act at the Supreme Court.
Hi, I'm Matt Sullivan, an attorney in Hogan Lovells' New York office.
And I'm Claudia Pear, an associate out of the D.C. office.
Today, Claudia and I are going to talk to you about the False Claims Act before the Supreme Court during 2019. Looking back at recent cases, it's apparent to us that this year was significant both for what the Supreme Court did decide, but also for the issues and cases that it declined to address. Claudia, could you talk us through the question presented to the court in that case?
Absolutely. It was called Cochise Consultancy, and it involved the statute of limitations period in order to bring an FCA case. Under the statute, there are two limitations period, and whichever one occurs last applies. Under the first, an action must be brought no more than 6 years after the violation, and under the second, an action must not be brought more than 10 years after a violation, so long as the suit is filed within 3 years of a government official charged with responsibility to act learning of the alleged fraud. Prior to Cochise, the lower courts were split on how that second limitations period applied, specifically to relator-initiated actions in which the U.S. had declined to intervene. First, they disagreed on whether the longer period, this 10-year period, applied at all in cases where the government declined to intervene. Some circuits said it didn't apply, and some did. And second, among those courts that said the longer period applied, they disagreed about whose knowledge was relevant. So one court said the relator's knowledge triggered the limitations period, and another said it was the government's knowledge. In Cochise, the Supreme Court resolved this circuit split, and it held that the longer limitations period can apply in suits filed by relators where the U.S. has declined to intervene, and it must be triggered by the U.S.'s knowledge and not the relator's. And according to Justice Thomas, this was made clear by the statute's plain text, and the court was unpersuaded by any arguments by Cochise that this would cause relators to delay or sleep on their claims.
Claudia, were there issues in Cochise Consultancy that the court has largely now left open for lower courts to grapple with and decide?
There were. So the most obvious question left open by the Supreme Court is, who is this official charged with responsibility to act? Is it someone who has responsibility for investigating a False Claims Act violation, like someone from the Department of Justice? Or could it be another official, perhaps an official at the federal agency that was allegedly defrauded? Before the Supreme Court, in its brief and at oral argument, the government argued that the official is the Attorney General or his delegate. So the government wants to cabin this to an officer of the DOJ. And even though the Supreme Court ultimately dodged this question when ruling that a relator doesn't qualify as such an official, the Supreme Court suggested that it would be someone at DOJ. So when making their ruling, they noted that private relators are not charged with responsibility to act in the way contemplated by the statute, and that's because they are not required to investigate or prosecute an FCA action. That being said, there's a case very recently out of the District of Maryland that held the FCA's 10-year period was inapplicable because the relator had told the Farm Service Agency, which was the agency that was allegedly defrauded. In that case, the relator had told the FSA the fraud allegations 4 years before filing the complaint. So the court held that the relator's only basis for asserting that her claims were timely was to proceed under the 6 years. So in the next few years, months, we should see this question bubbling up through the courts. Another open question would be when this official should have known of the material facts in a specific case and what counts as a material fact. There's no case law on this yet, but we should expect to see these questions being litigated and seeing the defense bar arguing that a government official should have known of the material facts, and so the case is barred by the limitations period.
Cochise Consultancy as a case addressed one important barrier to False Claims Act suits for a False Claims Act defendant. There are obviously others as well, including the public disclosure bar, the first to file bar, and pleading standards, including the heightened pleading standard of Federal Rule of Civil Procedure 9B that applies to False Claims Act suits. The public disclosure bar was last amended in 2010 as part of the Affordable Care Act. Following that statutory change, the public disclosure bar now provides that unless opposed by the government, where substantially the same allegations or transactions as alleged in an action or claim were publicly disclosed through any one of several qualifying sources, that claim is barred as a general matter. The 2010 amendments also impacted the original source exception, the sole exception to the public disclosure bar. Although those statutory changes happened nearly a decade ago, lower courts have continued to address the meaning of those amendments. And during 2019, one such case of note reached the Supreme Court. In United States ex rel Silver versus Omnicare, the Third Circuit had held that the FCA's public disclosure bar is not triggered when a relator relies on non-public information, in that particular case, on his own knowledge, to make sense of publicly available information, where the public information standing alone could not have reasonably or plausibly supported an inference of fraud that was occurring. In that case, the defendant petitioned for cert, arguing that every other circuit to consider that issue had made clear that actual reliance on public disclosures is sufficient on its own to trigger the public disclosure bar and to require a relator to prove that he is an original source of that information. The Supreme Court, however, declined to take up that issue, and both that issue and a handful of others under the post-2010 public disclosure bar remain unresolved by the Supreme Court. And as a result, lower courts will have to continue to address those interpretive questions. Another area that's of interest to False Claims Act defendants, as well as relators and the government, are the pleading standards set forth under Rule 9B of the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure. And in several cases in recent years, the Supreme Court has declined to take up issues regarding the pleading standard under Rule 9B. And what such case under Rule 9B, United States ex rel Metesky versus Raytheon Company, the Supreme Court denied certiorari on May 13th of 2019. The district court in that case had ruled that the complaint failed to meet Rule 9B's particularity requirement. The Ninth Circuit agreed without analysis, according to Metesky's cert position, and dismissed the suit on the ground that the complaint did not meet the 9B particularity requirement. The question presented in that case is whether the complaint gave Raytheon sufficient notice of the particular misconduct alleged to constitute fraud, such that it was error to dismiss the case under Rule 9B. Again, though, the Supreme Court declined to take up that issue. Among the cases before the Supreme Court that drew some public attention and interest is one in which the Supreme Court denied certiorari earlier this year. That's the case of Gilead Sciences, Inc. versus United States ex rel Campy. Claudia, could you talk us through the issue before the court and the aftermath of that case?
Absolutely. Campy touches on the issue of what continued payment by the government means for the materiality inquiry, pointing to Escobar and the cases since that have tried to elaborate on what that means. So in Campy, the defendant said that because the government continued to pay for medications after it knew of certain allegations of fraud, the violations were not material to its payment decision. And we have case law from several other circuits that says along the lines of continued approval or continued payment after learning of alleged fraud either renders a claim of materiality implausible or substantially increases the burden to establish materiality. So to counter the defendant's argument, both the relators and the U.S. argued that the court shouldn't read too much into this continued approval by FDA and the resulting effect on the government's payment decision. And the court agreed. So the court was concerned that allowing the defendant to do this would let the defendant use this as a shield against liability to fraud. The court also noted that there are many reasons why the government agency might choose to continue paying that are unrelated to the fraud allegations. And then finally, the court noted that it's disputed about what the government knew and when it knew. As a result, the Ninth Circuit allowed the claim against the defendants to proceed. And when this came up before the Supreme Court, interestingly, the government, as an amicus, recommended that the court deny certiorari because they said the case would be a poor vehicle for considering this question. And beyond that, the Ninth Circuit's decision wasn't in conflict with any other court because everyone agrees this determination is holistic and highly fact-dependent. And then finally, the government promised to seek dismissal of the case upon remand to the district court. The Supreme Court did deny certiorari. And then going back to the district court, the government did move to dismiss the case. So from this, we can see that courts are still continuing to grapple with what Escobar means. Matt, do you have any idea about why that is?
In the aftermath of the Supreme Court's 2016 decision in United Health Services versus United States ex rel Escobar, lower courts have grappled with how that case and its holding apply to various circumstances. Some of those issues have now once again reached the Supreme Court. During 2019, the Supreme Court declined to review a handful of cases involving post-Escobar materiality issues. In the case of U.S. ex rel Harmon versus Trinity Industries, in which the Supreme Court denied cert in January, the questions presented included whether continued payment by the government is a factor that may be considered by a jury in an FCA claim, or whether it is instead a determinative factor that would cause the claim to be immaterial as a matter of law. In the case of Brookdale Senior Living Communities versus United States ex rel Prather, where cert was denied in March, the questions presented included whether a failure to plead facts relating to past government practices in an FCA action can weigh against a finding of materiality, and second, whether an FCA allegation fails where the pleadings make no reference to the defendant's knowledge that the alleged violation was material to the government's payment decision. Another case raising materiality issues in which the Supreme Court denied cert is Stevens Institute versus United States ex rel Rose, where cert was denied in April. In that case, the question presented was whether general evidence that the Department of Education cared about compliance but never denied payment when colleges made a particular violation, whether that was sufficient to establish materiality. Likewise, in the case of United States ex rel Metesky versus Raytheon, where cert was denied in May, among the questions was whether false claims alleged by the petitioner were material to the government's decision to pay Raytheon. In each of those cases, the court had an opportunity but ultimately declined to provide further clarity as to the materiality standard in the wake of Escobar. Although it's never wise to make predictions, if one thing is certain, it's that the Supreme Court during 2020 will be confronted with additional cert petitions from litigants addressing these and other issues that remain unresolved under the False Claims Act.
Again, this is Claudia Pear.
And I'm Matt Sullivan.
Thank you so much for joining us on this podcast. If you have any questions, please feel free to reach out to us. Also, review our latest publication, False Claims Act 2019 Review and the Road Ahead. Thank you and have a good day.
Thanks for joining us today. For additional analysis on this topic and others around the False Claims Act, please download our latest publication, FCA Guide 2019 and the Road Ahead, from HoganLevels.com.